Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. This is the sixth night and this is the final stream of the sixth night, and it is with Apollonian Germ. He has a YouTube channel. He's also on Twitter. Are you on BitChute?
I do have a BitChute channel, but I haven't really begun transferring my catalog of videos over to there. If anything does happen to my YouTube channel, I will move to the BitChute channel, but for the time being, I don't have really any content over there.
Right, okay. All right, well, I'll link to that as well when I put this on BitChute. Okay, so I should say that you've been on before, in 2018. So this isn't the first time people will have seen you, but obviously it's the audience, there's a lot of changeover. So how would you describe your channel and yourself? I mean, I remember you at the start, you were studying philosophy or a philosophical discipline, and you're working in a garage, and you used to do videos in the garage, which was really sort of cozy. It reminded me of the film Christine, because I think you might have seen that. It's a lot of it's filmed inside a mechanics garage, and then you would also do videos where you're just talking to the camera in your car, and it's mostly about philosophical issues. So sorry, you introduce yourself.
Well, I still do the car videos. I think it was Friedrich Nietzsche who said that all the best ideas come when driving in a car. So I finally got my degree, my bachelor's degree, majoring in philosophy. So that's done with my university experience, thank God. I still, make videos that touch on a lot of philosophical subjects, or I try to parse out philosophical issues in current events and in historical events. And one of my favorite things to do is to sort of seek out the genealogies of how current institutions, current people in power, current political and social phenomena have developed over time, and trying to just trace the roots as back as far as I possibly can, and also to sort of get into the anatomy of how and the mechanics behind how the current oligarchy operates. Because one of my main assumptions that I work on is that democracy is basically a lie. Society is still run, just as it had been for thousands of years, run by an elite oligarchy. It's just that today they are more covert than they used to be, and that they have, ultimately they have an agenda that is not merely based in something like capitalistic profit or any of those sort of materialistic explanations that a lot of people like to give, like, oh, the elites, they're just greedy, they just want more money, they just want more power. I think that ultimately their agenda is defined almost religiously or spiritually, and that they have a broader idea of where they want to take mankind and what their role is. So that
you definitely see that in the likes of Klaus Schwab, George Soros, and even Bill Gates, although I think he seems like a sort of amateur member of all of this, but sort of fledgling. But yeah, you definitely get the sense that it's not about money. Money is too mundane a concern. It's not that they're not doing this to get richer. They probably will get richer out of it. I mean, I know that Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and so on have made an absolute fortune from COVID, but it's not about the money, to coin a phrase. So you say religious or spiritual. Would you like to go into more detail about that? Or would you like to talk about what would you like to talk about first, this or the healthcare experience and becoming a father?
Oh, well, that was a big milestone in my life that just happened. And it does, becoming a father does relate to a lot of this in sort of an oblique way. But yeah, that's kind of just a summary of my channel and the assumptions that I make and what a lot of my content springs out of. But yeah, we could talk a little bit first. I'll introduce everyone to my daughter. I just had a daughter. Here she is. She's one second. Here's this beautiful little angel. She's sleeping.
Aww.
This is what everybody should be aiming for.
Let me see if I can get you. Hold on a minute. Can I get this? Just unmute you. There we go. Oh.
This is the goal. This is what everybody should be aiming for. It's the most beautiful thing in life. So.
How old is she now?
5 weeks.
All right. So that might be a very interesting jumping off point. How are you a different person now from how you were 6 weeks ago?
I pretty much have to schedule every moment of my day. If I want to get anything done, I have to all my free time is taken up. So even something like doing a call like this or doing a few hours of sitting down and just researching a topic, or it all has to be planned out because it's constant. And the fact that you have to get up every 2 or 3 hours in the night to make sure she's changed, and my wife has to breastfeed her every 2 or 3 hours every night. And it's just the self-discipline and the getting over just the, it forces you to attain a new level of maturity, I suppose. It's something that, everything becomes about her. You have to drop anything and be ready to just attend to her needs at any moment.
And yet, as you say these words, you're smiling nonstop.
Because she's beautiful. She's just, when she smiles or giggles or makes cute little faces, you could do these kinds of things once you have a daughter. Look at this little, she makes... Those who seek to make our milk impure shall suffer our waz. So yeah, it's all worth it, and I can't wait until she starts talking and walking and I get to teach her about the world. And but you know, the experience of having her in the hospital, that's something that I'd like to talk about, because that was the first real like interaction that I had had with the medical system in years. I'm not the kind of guy who does regular checkups at the doctor or, you know, I haven't had to deal with doctors really since I tore my ACL in high school. And dealing with the medical system now, especially during this era of COVID, really gave me a new appreciation for how messed up the system has gotten at this point, and how the effects.
This is the American. It should just be clear. This is the American healthcare system. Do you want to specify what region of America? I don't know how precise you want to be, but we can just say it's the American healthcare system.
Yeah, I'm outside of Chicago, just outside Chicago, and I think the sort of criticisms that I would have of the medical system sort of apply in general. A lot of the criticisms that I arrived at were, I would have these experiences with doctors, and especially at the hospital the day of her birth. And afterwards I went and started reading if any other philosophers or thinkers had critiqued the medical system. And one that I came across was his name is Ivan Illich. And he wrote a book called Medical Nemesis. And so one of the main premises of that book, or one of the main ideas that he talks about, is that society has become over-medicalized, like in this old Aristotelian sense of, you know, you an excess or a deficiency of anything becomes bad. And right now in society, we have a major excess of medical or medicalization. And he was writing that like in the 70s. So imagine what he would think of the whole COVID situation today. I think that our experience was there were a few nurses that would treat us like human beings, like they actually wanted to get to know us personally. But for the most part, it felt like we were being put into sort of statistical profiles, and that we were being treated based on an abstract profile, especially the sorts of things that they wanted to do to my wife. Like they wanted to give her an epidural to take all the pain away. They wanted to do things like she was kind of having a hard time getting the baby out. And so they were starting to talk about doing a C-section within just a few hours. They were starting to talk about giving her different medications in the IV drip to induce the labor more, and all these sorts of things that my wife didn't want. And if she wasn't so stern about this, they would have put these procedures onto her that have side effects, that have issues that could have caused complications, that could have potentially threatened her life. And so that kind of thing.
Is that for money? Because they can then add that to the bill.
That might have something to do with it, but I think it's also just the way that this is like a general, I was going to make a video on this. This is a general problem that I think professionals in general have today, is that, and this is something also Illich talked about, I'll give him credit. He says that doctors have gone from being sort of artisans that administer a service to a certain person to being technicians that apply scientific rules that were bestowed upon them by the academic system, by their training, by certain procedures that they just have to learn and memorize. And that the fact that we're basically cranking out professionals at an industrial scale today with the academic system and the university system in general, I think it really creates a type of person that, and this is something that I think the system wants, it creates a type of person that follows the set procedures and just sort of applies policies and rules that are given to them that they've memorized. And, you know, when people wonder how something like a widespread massive conspiracy theory or something could be brought into effect, could actually be pulled off, it's because most people out there, the average person, is really not that smart. They're not that much of an independent critical thinker. And even the professionals who people think, you know, how could you have all these doctors in on it? How could you have all these medical professionals in on the conspiracy? Really, they're not in on anything. They're just the types of people that follow the rules that the authorities give to them, follow the procedures that are taught to them. They're just memorizers and regurgitators. And you see that a lot, I think.
Well, absolutely. You're seeing it now with COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I was born, the advice was don't breastfeed your kids. Give them formula. Mm. And I'm sure that every nurse in the hospital probably said, yes, of course, that's what to do. That's the advice that we know now that this is the best thing. And now, of course, that's completely flipped in its head. And everyone knows everyone assumes now that that's not the case. I think you're right that the medical profession is no more, well, I mean, science, all these people go on about climate change. We assume that every single one of them is operating rationally and independently. Like you've got a million people involved in it, so you've got a million checks and balances multiplied by, you know. No. They are just as much following the consensus and the enforced consensus as anyone outside of that, those professions. So I don't think you can rely on them to be rational. But your point was that the public in general, most people are not independent thinkers. And I agree with you completely. And this is why, you see, this is where you and I might disagree. I don't know. Because to me, it seems like that means that there has to be some sort of hierarchy, because otherwise nothing. I mean, if people aren't independent thinkers, how can anything happen unless they are told what to do or advised, guided in what to do, whatever. That's a question that I've been wanting to put to you to some time, and I'm not trying to catch you out or anything. I'm just curious about what you would say about that.
Well, that's actually a topic I've been wanting to address for a while, because I come from sort of a libertarian background, but I think that the impulse that I had toward libertarianism was purely rooted in the disdain that I have for the powers that be, for the people who are in charge and the direction that they're taking society and the sort of the overall agenda that is being put into play. And I since coming to, I guess what you would call more white nationalist or ethnic pride or these sorts of ideas, I've distanced from the libertarianism angle, because I've never been the type of person that thinks there shouldn't be any regulations, especially regulations on moral questions. I come from a very strict moral family that has very strict ideas about what is good and what is bad, and especially from my father, he's always, you know, been a great role model in that sense. But I think for me, and this is sort of a radical idea that I don't, I know that it's in today's day and age, it's sort of a pie in the sky ideal, but I still hold this as a radical idea. I think that the locus or the fundamental unit of authority in society should be something more like the family clan than a state. And the yes. family clan should have their heads, their, you know, capos, like an old Italian mob style term. They should have their rulers, essentially. And that should be the source, the wellspring of morality, of law, of order, and that personal style of creating order should be, I think, the real fundamental unit of order in society. But yeah,
I do think that if you had if it was all the fathers in society who were in charge of what's allowed in popular culture, you would never have had rap music or these degenerate things that are clearly awful for, you know, their sons and daughters. You know, they just wouldn't have allowed it. I'm sure.
Yeah. So I don't disagree. And I just as much as anyone, I wish that we did live in a state that matched our ideals more or less. I would probably be less inclined to libertarian beliefs or things like that if the state was more benign or less openly aggressive, and if it wasn't trying to literally genocide our people. So
that's the thing. That's the thing, right? I mean, I quite like the idea of a society being a system that facilitates and protects the populace.
Yeah.
I don't really see what else it should be than that. But the populace has to be the thing, the people, the ethnic group or whatever, or the culture has to be the focus. It can't be the state and it can't be economics. That's insane. And it definitely can't be high flown ideas about how, you know, how the entire human species should operate. So we are just one node, and we'll do whatever world government tells us to do.
Mm.
You know, or whatever we think that there should be a universal brotherhood of man. So guess what, ethnic group, you're fucked.
Mm.
You know, that is the mentality of our current leaders, the elite who's in charge. I mean, that's it at best. At worst, they don't even give a shit about that. It's just you are a consumer and nothing. Just suck on that straw with the Pepsi supply. That's your function in this universe. I mean, that's a horrendous view of human life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think of the megalomania that it requires at the highest levels for people to have that sort of ideal of thinking that they have the best way to govern and order the entire planet, all the different peoples, all the different nations, that they have this level of megalomania. I think, you know, the only way, and this goes back to what I was describing my channel as, the whole religious motivation of it. I think the only way to explain that is when you start, first of all, you could just look at it empirically speaking and look at who has been behind a lot of these social organizations and social movements and even funding and supplying wars, the money behind a lot of these things. You look at who, and you know who I'm talking about, has been behind these things. It's a certain special religious group that sees themselves as being chosen by the one creator God that is in charge of everything, and that they're his special people that are collaborating. They're emanations of his divinity.
You talk about European-style socialists?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yes. I was wondering. You can be quite explicit. Don't worry.
Yeah, those socialist little hats that they wear.
All right. You were saying about how that, when you look at who's behind these things, that elucidates the purpose of it. I think you were going to get.
Yeah. So that I think is a main piece of the puzzle. And so when you look at something like what's happening now with COVID, I mean, there's a lot of different avenues you could go down with that kind of a question. I think that's the main question of our day and age, is what the hell is going on with COVID? And it's something that you could ponder whether or not it's as bad as they say it is. You could ponder whether or not there's basically three levels I've talked about. You can question the existence of it. You can question the efficacy of the regulations that they've come up with. And then you can question the moral and political value of what's been going on. And then beyond all that, you can question like what the really, if they've created it or if they're steering it in a certain direction. But I think that regardless of how you answer any of those questions, the biggest point that I would like to get across is that it's politically and ethically unacceptable, in my opinion, regardless of how bad it is and regardless of how good their mask mandates and lockdowns are, and that regardless of whether or not it was created in a lab in China or if it came from a bat or if it's just something that's being fabricated out of thin air, it doesn't matter what those answers are. The fact is that the direction that they're taking us and the way that they're using this event is completely unacceptable. It's bringing us into a world that nobody wants to live in. It's a medical dictatorship, essentially. It's a new 9/11.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting comparison. Let me just say first, I think you're right that we might never know where this came from, what was going on in China in the first few months, whether it originated there. We might never know this, but what is clear is that this is now a virus that has a 99.6% survival rate. You have to be, I think, over 70 in order to have a 5% chance of dying from it. You've still got a 95% chance of not dying from it. And you have to have comorbidities and all the rest of it. It's not a serious thing. It's simply not. It's nowhere near as serious as they were claiming at the start and are still claiming now. They're still claiming it's very serious because they're still using it as the justification for all of what's going on. This huge vaccine drive, the mask wearing, the social distancing, the lockdown, and of course the Great Reset. Yeah. So that implies that, well, this is a dreadfully serious virus. I mean, it's unprecedented.
Right.
When it isn't. It obviously isn't. I mean, they didn't do this for the Spanish flu 100 years ago, which killed millions of people. So this is, it's simply not comparable.
Yeah, or tuberculosis before that. Or, you know, there always will be diseases that are affecting mankind and killing thousands and thousands of people every year. There always has been and there always will be. And that's why, you know, I compare this to 9/11 because 9/11 provided this pretext. And once again, that's another thing where you could talk about all the questions of what actually happened that day. But really what matters is that it's been used to create a pretext, a justification for the government to establish wide sweeping securitization policies that have restricted our rights, restricted our freedoms, and justified total surveillance, justified all these things. And it's never going away. This war on terror has never gone away. It's been almost 20 years now. And this is just the new normal, as they're saying with COVID. We've already had a new normal after 9/11. Now we're going into a new normal after COVID. And if you thought that the justifications that the war on terror provided of stripping away liberty at will, of surveilling people at will, of gathering data on them at will, this COVID is going to justify that times 100. I just heard a story of a woman from Georgia, a young woman from the state of Georgia in the United States, who went to visit the Cayman Islands to see, I think, her boyfriend performing in some kind of jet ski competition or show or something like that. And she was supposed to self-quarantine for 14 days. But she got there and then 2 days later went to the show. And they caught her and arrested her. And the big question, like, her mom got on CNN and was saying like, oh, well, there were other people who were breaking quarantine. And that's the whole conversation is surrounding that. But I would want to talk about, you know, how did they even know? How they're surveilling her at every moment, watching her leave that hotel, watching her get there off the plane, taking notice of every step that you make. And this is just normal now. This is just, oh, yeah, well, should she have gone to jail for 4 months? Should it just have been a $1,000 fine? Oh, but the normal thing is that she was surveilled and that she's now being punished for something that, how should anyone have known that? So, yeah, this is, and, it, you know, I don't want to keep jumping all over the place, but it does tie back to this question of who's in control and what they really want, because they think that they're going to, by having this total godlike power and godlike control over society, correct everyone's behavior and make a more perfect world and establish a sort of utopia. So this is,
I think it's their vision of ordinary people is a terrifying one, because, you know, I might see ordinary people as needing to be led, needing to be guided, needing to be looked after, and needing to be protected from themselves in some ways. That's what morality is for. It's what culture is for. And institutions have guided, you know, that's fine. I don't really have a problem with that. But the conception that the powers that be seem to have of ordinary people is perhaps illustrated by the mask. I mean, it's a terrifying thing because Basically, it means that you're literally a faceless unit. You're just a bundle of meat that carries diseases, and it's a risk, it's a hazard, it's a danger that has to be managed throughout the course of its biological existence.
Hmm.
70 years on Earth, 80 years, and there's no real, there's nothing beyond that. It literally is. You're basically you're a farm animal. You're cattle.
Goiter.
Yeah. Well, you could use that word.
That's another way we're never going back. Too. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another way we will never go back. Is that the average cattle, the average sheep, as you're saying, has now had this trauma inflicted upon them to the point where, even after the lockdowns are, if they ever are, completely removed. After the mask mandates are completely removed, people will always have this memory, this trauma of being afraid of other people.
And especially as I was saying in one of the previous streams, the 5-year-old kids who are going to school and kindergarten being told 2 meters away, that will stay with them. You know, I might have said this on air before, but when I was, my teeth are pretty bad. But they could have been even worse, because when I was about 9 or 10, I had a brace, and then I got this new orthodontist who said that, because my teeth were a bit crooked, and he said, "Oh, they'll solve themselves as you grow up, so you don't need a brace anymore." And that's why I stopped using it, and his prediction didn't come true. But anyway, while I did have the brace, it wasn't the train tracks thing that is glued to your teeth. It was this sort of I don't know what you'd call it. Like, it fitted into the top of my mouth. And it got to the point where I think I had it for 6 months, 9 months. And it got to the point where if I didn't have it in, I thought it would occur to me and I'd get a shock. Oh, fuck, I should have the brace in. And years later, even now, like 20, 30 years later, occasionally it still hits me. Oh, I don't have the brace in.
Hmm.
That's that long. I think it was when I was about 10 years old. But it still is there as something that, I should have that thing in and I don't. This is something that it will get very deep seated with a lot of people. Oh, I don't have the mask on. It does seem like this, that they're training us to be obedient and submissive.
Yeah.
That's the point I was making. I don't really have any more sort of intelligent to say about it than that. I just see it that way. And it's disturbing to see loads of people going around with these masks on, because it looks like a subordinated population.
Yeah. And I mentioned this in a recent video where, if a person is told, I think I'm just kind of theorizing here. I don't have any like hard evidence to back this up, but this is what I would think is true. If a person is told conflicting statements by somebody in authority, something that just doesn't make sense, if they're lied to, if they're deceived, they're told one thing and then told the opposite thing, by an authority figure, like in 1984. Like, this is something that in 1984, one of the main things that the party wants the party members to do is to be able to do this doublethink, to be able to have conflicting ideas, cognitive dissonance, and to never be able to resolve that dissonance because they've been told by an authority figure one thing and then the opposite. Once somebody is able to do that, I think their critical thinking faculty just short circuits. It's difficult for them to ever think critically again, for them to ever think logically and to analyze what the authority is telling them logically ever again, because there's like a pain and a fear and a sense of shame that they've accepted these two contradictory ideas purely on the basis of authority, the social pressure of it, just all these different social pressures come into play. And once that happens, once they're deceived in that way, and it was even Plato who said something like, anything that deceives men seems to produce a magical enchantment. I think sort of what could be meant by that is that once people are deceived in that way, they're not able to think critically on their own anymore. So when we're told things in the course of the coronavirus, we're told things by someone like Dr. Fauci. Early on, he was saying something like, masks don't work. They might stop some spittle. They might stop some droplets, but they don't really work, and don't wear them. It's pointless. And now they're essential. Now masks are the most important thing in the world. Everybody has to wear them. Also in the beginning, Dr. Fauci said something like, and there are clips of these things where he says this, asymptomatic people don't really spread the disease. You don't have to worry about it. And all past respiratory diseases, people who are asymptomatic don't really spread it. And now it's the reason that we have to have these lockdowns is because asymptomatic people spread it so much. And so you get all these contradictory ideas that are given to you. And I can't even imagine how bewildering it is to the average person in the public who is sort of just being swept one way and the other. And it's just, you get to the point where it's like, you can't understand. You don't even want to try to understand, because as soon as you start trying to pick these questions apart, you start to realize, I must be being lied to, or these people are just idiots, or because they can't, you can't have all these contradictory ideas. So they just stop trying to figure it out.
Or they think that, well, I must be stupid. I just must be. If I can't reconcile this, and the experts seem to think that it's these two things are fine, but I can't reconcile it, well, then I just must be stupid. So I'll just have to go along with what they're telling me.
So I think that is part of it. And, you know, so there's that issue. There's the distrust of their fellow men. There's the fact that, you know, who's going to be able to gather now to protest, to do, it's really creating a,
the protest thing is, and actually, how is it pronounced? Fauci?
Yeah.
Anthony Fauci. Fauci. There was one clip of him where he was asked about gathering in public. You've said it's really dangerous. So should the protest stop? Meaning the BLM protest.
Mm.
And he just fell silent. And he's like, I couldn't say. it's infuriating.
Yeah. I saw a couple of tweets from, I think it was like London Metropolitan Police or something like that, where one of them was from a day when they were doing BLM protests, and the police were like, all right, everyone who's going to the BLM protest, be safe, remember to wear a mask, social distance. And then like a couple of weeks later, they're like, anybody who's attending the COVID-19 protest will be arrested.
It was literally it was like 7 days later.
No kidding. Okay, yeah. That's...
It was incredible. And so the COVID, that one actually, I think there have been several throughout the summer. One of the, I think it was that one, got actually cancelled by the police. Hmm. And then, they're not social distancing, they're not obeying the protocols. So we've got it. But the BLM protest was also clearly in violation of those protocols, but it was fine. And then there was an Islamic march that was, again, same thing, we'll allow that. But as soon as it's a... anti-COVID thing, no, it's violating the protocol. I mean, it's absolutely, it's so obviously insane and hypocritical and dishonest that you can only assume you're kind of meant to notice this. You're kind of meant to notice that we're clearly contradicting ourselves. I think it is almost just a naked display of power for the sake of it. Like they want you to know that they don't give a shit.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, and it's the whole surveillance thing is going to keep getting worse and worse. This is something we've mentioned, the Great Reset, a couple of times up until this point. But, you know, getting into more about what that actually means, I don't think a lot of people really know exactly what that means. There's kind of a vague idea of they're going to establish some kind of Marxist totalitarian dictatorship type of regime. But and that's, by the way, debunked on Wikipedia. If you go to the Wikipedia page for the Great Reset, it says like, oh, that there's all these people who are promoting this kind of great reset rhetoric and stuff, but then like the final paragraph is conspiracy theories. This is just the, by the way, it's a conspiracy theory for people to think it's a totalitarian thing. And yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
That is another thing. It's amazing. It's like when, you know, they'll say diversity is a strength, but then there are people moaning that diversity means, they'll say something like, population replacement, the great replacement is a conspiracy theory, but we're really glad that it's happening.
Right.
It's that level of open self-contradiction.
Right. Well, they get into what they really will dispute is something like, they'll say, yeah, with the great replacement, conspiracy theory, these evil Nazi white nationalists think that they're being replaced in their countries on purpose. But really, this is just a natural historical process, and nobody can cause this. Nobody can have any control over this. This is just, it's like the wind blowing. It's like the sun rising. It's, that's how they call it a conspiracy. But then you look at, you know, the fact that immigration laws can be controlled. And,
I live on a country that's essentially a very large island. You know, there is no way that if they wanted to stop immigration into Britain, they absolutely could. I don't believe for a second that it's just some impossible task.
Right.
Bullshit.
That'd be easy. And history shows that. That's another thing where people who say like, oh, all of this is just capitalism and they're just trying to increase their profit margins or increase the consumer base or things like that. You look back just before the 1960s, America at least was still very capitalist, and there were literal eugenics laws on the book where miscegenation, mixing of race, mixed marriages and stuff were banned in dozens of states. It's not something that's just a function of capitalism. America was just as capitalistic back in the 1940s when eugenics was being taught in Harvard, and
this is the ironic thing, and I don't want to go too far into this for obvious reasons, but it is an amusing thing to learn that the Allies were as racist as the Nazis, and you know that, and as pro eugenics, or even you could say that they were even more pro eugenics as than the Nazis. I mean, Hitler did actually shake the hand of what was his name? I've forgotten the black athlete's name at the Olympics, Jesse something.
I forget his name.
Yeah, but I think it was the American president who didn't. But it's now spoken of as the reverse, where, Hitler was too racist to shake this guy's hand. But he actually did, and I think gave him a Christmas present or something. I can't remember now. But it's just one of those things that's been misrepresented.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying that just for the sake of the security services. I'm not pro Hitler. I'm not trying to sell anyone the Nazi Party. I'm just saying this is what I've read. So the other thing was, that the American GIs were polled. I think it was in 1943. It was something basically, would you be up for integrated barracks, so the black GIs and the white GIs would have the same barracks, and they said no by quite a large majority. And I think there was also something else. Would you rather the Nazis won the war or America desegregated or something like that? And they said that we'd rather Hitler won the war. I mean, I can't remember the question now. This is just paraphrasing. The point is, this is where the left are actually, oddly enough, correct when they say that all white people are we're all as bad as each other. We're all as bad as the Nazis, because in a way it's actually true that to say that, well, we were as racist, the Allies were as racist as that, because what the civic nationalists will say is, we defeated the Nazis. We can't possibly be as racist as them. But no, in a way we actually were, or more so. Because I mean, it's obviously a big issue, but it's just amusing. It's just amusing to see how much drivel is spoken about this.
Yeah,
and I've forgotten how I got into this. How did we stumble onto this?
Oh yeah, it sort of went
tendentious topic. But anyway, go on.
That was a good tangent, but it was from talking about the Great Reset being called a conspiracy, and then the Great Replacement being called a conspiracy. When it is, I mean, these are actual, like, concerted efforts, and the fact that, just like we were saying, just 70, 80 years ago, the values and norms in society were pretty much the opposite of what they are today, shows that this could not have been organic. This is not just something that magically happened. This is something that took a lot of effort, a lot of power, a lot of finance, a lot of propaganda. You don't get a shift like this overnight.
No.
So, but what is the whole Great Reset in terms of COVID? Getting back to that, what it really is, I don't hear a lot of people talking about. And, the Great Reset is something that was discussed by Klaus Schwab, the chairman of the World Economic Forum. And Schwab also has coined this term, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is really what I think he means by the Great Reset. What they want to bring about with this whole Great Reset is this Fourth Industrial Revolution. And when you start looking into what that is, it's basically automating everything that possibly can be automated, integrating sensors and data collection mechanisms into every appliance in your house, pretty much anything that can have a sensor or a data collection mechanism will have it put into it. And this is why, like, Joe Biden is talking about this whole building back better strategy that he wants to employ, where he wants to completely renovate all the infrastructure in America, everything from the transportation systems, the government buildings, to schools. Everything needs to be renovated. And the purpose of the renovation is to recreate things with this in mind: automation, the Internet of Things, which is the sensors sending data to central servers and cloud servers and stuff that will keep it, total surveillance, total automation, that kind of thing. And that's the sort of thing that a government theoretically would need to really have total control over a population, a true panopticon situation where everyone feels like they are just totally surveilled and controlled. And so that's, I think, and yeah, that's the direction that I think things are going. And they also talk about stuff like making things more equitable and reducing the standard of living in first world countries so that they could build up the third world countries, and this whole climate change justification for that. And
it's like the return of some dreaded character from the first season. You know, whenever someone mentions climate change, it's like, fuck.
Right.
Yeah, this prick from 2007 who's just made a comeback appearance. You know, you wish you'd seen the last of them.
Yeah.
But here it is again.
Yeah. So if anyone's interested in, like, learning more about the Great Reset, look up the Fourth Industrial Revolution and what they really want to do with that. Cause that is some spooky stuff. And you know, it just, I mean, we're getting close to an hour, I see, but, just to do one of my things, which is looking into the history, we could talk about, isn't it weird? Have you ever thought, I'll ask you a question. Have you ever thought about how weird it is that there are literally, let's see how many, does it give me a number here? The wiki page doesn't give me a number, but there are literally dozens upon dozens of international organizations, everything from the UN, the Palace of Justice from the UN, the World Economic Forum, the World Trade Organization, the UNESCO, the World Health Organization, the Red Cross, all of these major international organizations. Isn't it weird that they're all from Switzerland? You ever thought about why that is?
Yeah, I haven't actually, but it is interesting that they do seem to be based in, and that's where Davos happened, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let me just check this. I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, yeah, go on.
So that struck me as weird the other day. That's a question that I pondered upon, which is why are there so many international organizations in Switzerland? And, you know, what's the other thing that everybody associates with Switzerland? Besides, like, fondue and
chocolate the Alps, mountains,
right,
and everything is extremely expensive.
Right. What's the other thing? It's banking, international banking. Okay, Switzerland has been a center of international banking since at least the 1600s, and in the early 1700s, they passed one of the world's first strict banking secrecy laws, where Switzerland has some of the strictest banking secrecy laws, where like nobody can pry, nobody has the right to subpoena or get information from banks about who has money there, how much money is in there. And the fact that it's in the Alps, it's a very easily defensible location. You could build these great vaults into the mountainsides. That lent itself to being, and it's right in between Italy, Germany, France. It's a great little, you know, choke point of travel between those three countries, which were major powers in the 1600s and 1700s. And so you have, I think this connect, there has to be some connection between international banking in Switzerland. And not only is it stuff like the World Trade Organization, the UN, but also, you know, the entire system of education that exists today comes from conferences that happen, the pedagogy, the strategies that teachers employ, the way that teachers are taught at universities, comes pretty much out of these big conferences that happened in Switzerland. International Baccalaureate, I don't know if you've ever heard of that program, comes out of Switzerland. All the big names in educational history, like Piaget, Montessori, I'm blanking right now on other names, Dewey.
Rudolf Steiner, maybe. What was the one? There's a name for those, that alternative type of Waldorf.
Waldorf schools, yeah.
Rudolf Steiner was Austrian. Waldorf school, education, can't remember.
But anyway,
yeah.
There were these like world economic or world educational conferences that happened there. So, you know, the whole educational system, which is pumping out these liberal progressive ideals, also comes from conferences that happened in Switzerland. So I think that there has to be this grand connection between the international banking activity that was going on there and the modern educational, economic, the UN, all these systems that are going on right now. And the other thing that I knew that came from Switzerland, just to make one more connection, which I thought was pertinent, is, you know, Calvinism comes from Switzerland. One of these great, John Calvin, a great reformer of the church, came from Switzerland. And one of his big ideas, well, he came from France, but he did a lot of his activity in Geneva, Switzerland. He ran a school there. He got together with other Calvinist reformers there. It was a major center of the Reformation. And one of his ideas was like relaxing these restrictions on usury, relaxing restrictions on lending on interest. And if you look, look at the page on Wikipedia for Calvinism with politics and society, the countries like Amsterdam, which became Calvinist, became a refuge for political or religious minorities like the socialists that we were talking about earlier with the tiny hats.
And right, right.
So you see like Calvinism, and there's a book, I know I'm jumping around a lot here, but there's a book called When Scotland Was Jewish. I'm not accusing you of anything, but When Scotland Was Jewish talks about how Scotland actually had a major, and this goes into DNA evidence, archaeological evidence, it's really well written, has an upper class that began around the 1100s of Sephardic refugees that came up into Scotland and basically established themselves as a mercantile upper class. And in that book, he talks about, they make an argument that Calvin himself was a crypto, and that John Knox, who created Presbyterianism, who was also a Calvinist, was a crypto. And the fact that these Calvinist societies like Amsterdam became refuges, and I would say also Switzerland, which was a Calvinist, became a Calvinist society, became refuges for these socialist bankers. I think that there has to be some connection there. I'm not, you know, I can't create like a very coherent explanation for all this for you right now, but I'm just throwing out that this is one of the things I do, is just throw out connections, throw out threads throughout history that warrant further investigation for people who are watching. Just look into it. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Yeah, I've just looked up some pictures of John Knox, and all right.
You have a long nose.
Well, it could just be distortions. You wouldn't be surprised either way. Let's put it that way. Switzerland. The thing is, it's obviously a tax haven as well, which is another aspect of all this. That's the annoying thing, is that Switzerland is a beautiful country. It's a lovely country to drive through. I've driven it through it several times on the way to Italy from Britain, and it is. You do get this sense of, my God, you know, this is where the mega rich go. This is where they meet, and so on. I don't really have any more to say about it, because it's just something that, you know, like, I've driven through St. Moritz, which is mentioned in that song, Peter Sarstedt's song, Where Do You Go To, My Lovely? And it is lovely, you know, it's idyllic. And you think, damn, it's a shame. It's sad to think that such awful schemes could be hatched in such a lovely place.
Yeah, it is. I wish I've been there. The only place in Europe I've ever really been is Norway. I have family up there. But, I'd love to visit Switzerland. But,
well, yeah. You should go to Davos next year.
Maybe they'll invite me.
I'll see you there. All right. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say, or should we end it there?
Oh, we can end it there. You know, that's just one of the things that, you know, if you come to my channel, check out my videos. That's the kind I like to just look back into history and try to trace things back. And I wish that more people did that. I know that you've spoken with other guests about this whole idea of not getting too bogged down and really focusing on the here and now, and this like doom. What have you called it? Like something to do with doom and gloom.
Doom mongering,
something like that.
Well, look, I mean, that's more about, I can't remember what comment it was, what the context was. What I would say is, you should probably look for what agency you have in your own life. And that, you know, that might be depressing. It might be that you can't save the world or change people's minds en masse. But, you know, that might be the reality for all of us. But either way, I do think that it's a good idea to maximize control of your own life. That just seems common, especially if you are an independent thinker. Because then, if you're not in control of your own life, if there are ways in which you're falling short of that, it will eat at you, as it does with me, and certainly has done in the past. So yeah, that's what I would say about that. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, if you can live off, and this is why I was talking about Bitcoin and so on, because I think it's a good idea to, if you have that nest egg, so you don't have to worry about an employer who might fire you so much, that kind of thing, or a media that might disgrace you and shame you and whatever, ostracize you, then yeah. So I think that you should try to have as much control over that as you can. But I mean, even closer to home than that, though, is your own body. You know, getting fit, this is why I want to do that. And even closer to home than that is your own mind. So, for example, in my case, I want to learn how to master stress better, because I do get stressed. Mm. And that's been a perennial thing with me. So, this is what I hope to be concentrating on next year.
Yeah.
In my own work.
Well, I can just put my two cents in on that question, because I think what you're saying is true. And one of the best ways to, I think, have that much control in your life is, starting with your mind, is learning how we even got into the situation. I think that if you don't have a grasp on how society got to this position, then the world can seem, I don't know, really like a whirlwind of chaos. And that type of living in that type of world where you don't understand how we got to the present moment sort of means that you don't know what to expect next. And if you don't know what to expect down the road, then how can you make decisions and plan and effectively create some kind of plan for your life? And I think that one of the best, ways to make an effective plan is to have some idea of what's coming. And what's coming is more of this creep toward totalitarianism, more attacks on our people. And if we just take that as something for granted, then I think that we can make more effective plans. And so economically speaking, so doing something like trying to find an entrepreneurial way of making money, I think is your best bet. Not a lot of people can do that, unfortunately. But if you can, like my wife and I recently have taken to going through thrift stores and finding nice wool sweaters and other sort of decent items and reselling them on eBay. And we've actually made a decent amount of money doing that. And I've, become a wool supremacist in the process.
That's cool. That's really cool. I like that idea.
So doing things like that, and also the fact, look at, I have this beard. I wouldn't be able to have this grand beard if I worked at some big corporation. So I work as a toaster.
That's another example of you being a wool supremacist.
The woolly look. Sweater. I work as a tow truck driver, and that's not an ideal job. And I have a bachelor's degree from university. I shouldn't be working as a tow truck driver, but I've come to enjoy it. I've actually come to enjoy it. And I respect the people I work with. They're honest, decent people. And, you don't have to worry about what you say around them or pull any punches, or they're just sort of salt of the earth type people. And, it's an honest job where, once you get that car up on the bed and you deliver it to the place that you're going to, that you kind of feel like you accomplished something. So finding something like that, rather than trying to like hide your convictions and working in some 9-to-5 corporate job, and, just try to reduce your expenses, try to, find unorthodox ways to reduce your expenses and make a little more money without having to depend on the system. Cause that's really the biggest way of control. We've talked about control in this conversation. The biggest way that they control us is in our pocketbooks. And if we depend on a big corporation that's pushing this globo homo shit, then how are you really going to fight them if you're working for them?
Yes, exactly. And this is why it's one of the depressing aspects of modern life is that it's so easy to support the very institutions that are poisoning us. To give us and yes, I know I've got a can of Coca-Cola right next to me, so I'm aware of it. But that's an example of what I mean, really.
I don't know if it's the Coca-Cola or the Pamplemousse LaCroix.
Well, that at least sounds more fancy and adventurous. it's so easy to support these damn things because they offer something that is useful, convenient, etc. So I know what you mean, and I think you're right that we should try to reduce our dependency on these things as much as possible. By the way, someone was asking earlier, how can they donate to you? In the DLive live chat. So should I point them to your channel?
Yeah, send them to my channel. I have a PayPal donation link. And if you the best way was just buy a sweater. Buy one of the sweaters. I also have some nice, Snora is the name of the type of jewelry. I was given a whole bunch by my grandma. She used to try to sell this jewelry. It's a Nordic style silver jewelry. It's really nice. It's like based on Viking finds that they like ruins and archaeological finds. Pretty cool stuff. So I sell that and wool sweaters and some other things on my eBay. So that's a good way to support if you, you know, don't just want to donate.
Excellent. So. There are a few super chats. Okay. I can then. I don't know if you'll want to answer this. It's about a farm. Do you want to go into that? It's just a question. Are you still? Okay, I'll write it in the private chat, and you can tell me if you want to answer this or not. Because I don't know if it's confidential.
Well, since having a baby with my wife who's from Quebec, the next step for us is going to Quebec. So, yeah, no, we're not going to go to the family farm.
Right. Okay. So someone else says, I just can't do Chicago type winters. So I hope that Apollonia Germ will like the great year round growing season of California.
I'll never move to California.
That's his username is Unknown Californian. So I think he might be joking. Yeah, I can't imagine you in California somehow. It seems absolutely anathema to you. okay. I don't think I want to answer that. I don't think I want to ask that question, Wood Woes Happa, if you don't mind. It's for reasons which should be obvious. Okay. I'm new to Mike's channel, but I love it. He goes so hard in the paint. It's fantastic. I've been going through all his videos, and they are so edifying. I can only wish to win the lottery and start a commune in California with Mike. He's such a cool dude. There we go.
Thank you.
All right, and then the final one. Merry Christmas, Woes and Germ. The socialists, etc., have always made public health central to their platforms. The question is, do they really care about making a healthy society? If they care, why do they promote the food pyramid and I don't know what the food pyramid is, and sexual license? We see a lot of sick people despite all the medicine.
The food pyramid in America, at least, is a recommendation from the health department of the federal government that it suggests or recommends to people that they have, I think, the largest portion of their daily diet should be like grains and bread. And then above that are vegetables and above that are... above that are meats. So they're basically saying that like meat should be a small portion, smaller than the grains, which isn't that healthy. Yeah, let me give you a link to my eBay real quick. Someone's asking for that. Yeah, I'm not able to find it. It's on my channel. Just go look at any of my videos, any of my recent videos, and look in the description. There's a link to it. It's my eBay. Okay. But yeah, that's we could talk for another half hour about something like that. But basically, yeah, the idea that these elites, these people in high levels of political authority, really care about the average person's health when there's so many problems that are going, like the diet, average diet, the fact that nobody exercises, the fact that there's so many people eat just the worst food and have the worst habits, and the fact that they, you know, look at the water supply, what's in the water supply, and what's, there's so many. Pollution and the GMOs, you know, I could go on and on about.
Yeah. Here's an interesting question just before we finish. Thoughts on using food stamps, even if we don't need them? Personally, I love getting steak on Globo Homo Bux.
Hey, I would be getting food stamps if it weren't for the fact that my wife cannot be considered a public charge until she gets her green card here. We're receiving no assistance from the government right now because otherwise she wouldn't be able to get her green card.
Right, I see. Right, what I would say about this, and this has come up before a couple of years ago. I remember answering this question, I think, in 2017. I think that people shouldn't use welfare unless they need it because it is spiritually damaging to live on welfare. I did for a long time, so I'm speaking from experience. It's not good for you. And maybe other people would be more resilient to it, so they could do it and be quite blasé about it. But for me, it always really ate into me that I was living off other people. I hated it. So I would say just be careful with that. You're absolutely right that the system is completely corrupt and it's bringing in loads of people into our countries who are living off welfare. So I can understand someone saying, well, why shouldn't we all just do it? That's up to you. It's obviously still something that I wouldn't advocate for legal reasons, but also I would say if you do it, be aware that it could have a spiritual cost to you.
I could see that angle of it. And, my libertarian past says I don't want any welfare from the government. And really, ideally speaking, even like with these stimulus checks, I think they just passed in America just tonight, they passed a stimulus bill where they're going to be giving everyone $600. And like my immediate practical mind says, great, $600. Fucking give me the $600. I need it. But in the back of my head, abstractly and intellectually, I know like all this printing of the money and the dilution of the money supply, the inflation that's going to be happening, the fact that they're just getting people used to this idea of getting free money from the government, all of that is not good. Like in the long term, we're going to see consequences for this kind of stimulus check type of mentality and people look for
profligacy.
Yeah, it's not good in the long run. But I look at it like, the people in charge are my enemy and they're handing out free money. I might as well grab some if it's going to help me in the short term. It's not something that, I would like to become dependent on, but if it's going to help me save a little bit more money so that I could buy an AR-15, or it's going to help me, put a little more money away for, putting a little more into Bitcoin or, getting my property up in Quebec or whatever it might be, if it's going to help me with that like goal that I have in mind, then I'd say go for it. But that's I see what you're saying.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there then. So this is really fun. That was Apollonian Germ, and you can find him on. Sorry, do you want to say something?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I didn't know.
And you can find him on YouTube, and please do look at his eBay site, which is linked from there. And thank you for appearing on Millennial.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Hope you're back to making content. And I hope my comments back in 2018 didn't
forget
you too upset. And I hope that I know that you've talked. This is my last thing. I know that you've talked about self-improvement. I really wish you the best with that. And I hope to see more of you on YouTube.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, well, I'll be back tomorrow night, and thank you. I mean that. I'll be back tomorrow night with Dangerfield, and then Red Pill Germany, and then Bitcoin Beginnings. That's Carl Thorburn, and then Jared Taylor. Jared Taylor will be on DLive only. The other three will be on YouTube as well. So, excellent. That was the sixth night of Millennial 2020. Hope you've all enjoyed it. And Apollonian Germ, thank you for appearing. Everyone else, I'll see you tomorrow night. Bye for now.